We're holding the top of Nun Hei Amud Aleph. And we learned yesterday, we started talking about Eretz Ha'amim, the fact that the lands of the Goyim outside Eretz Yisrael are Tomei D'Rabbanan. And we discussed what is the idea behind that. Is it that the very air over there is Tomei, and in that case it has less to do with the Halachas of Tumah V'Tahara and more just the fact that Chachamim wanted to discourage people from leaving Eretz Yisrael? Or is it that the actual dirt there is Tomei, if a person walks on it or touches it, or even it overshadows it, because there may be bodies buried in it, whether the bodies of the people from the Mabul, whether Goyim who bury indiscriminately, whether Jews who were killed indiscriminately in these places. Anyway, so we're discussing that question. What is it, Mishum Avira because of the air, or Mishum Gusha because of the actual clods of dirt? So now the Gemara says, top of Nun Hei Amud Aleph, Lema Katanoi. Should we say that this is actually the subject of Machlokes Tanoi? A Braisa says, Hanichnas La'Eretz Ha'amim B'Shida Tevo Migdol. If a person goes into Eretz Ha'amim in a Shida Tevo Migdol, which are various kinds of large boxes, various kinds of large wooden boxes. Now, the point is, in other words, it's not just, now you have to consider, the box, of course, you could figure the box is preventing Tumah from coming to them. You have to figure, though, wouldn't the box itself become Tumah? And the answer is that you have, in Halacha, when you have wooden boxes or boxes made out of most other material, of many other materials that are more than a certain size, it's called Bob Midah. We have in the Mishnayos that we do for the 11 months in the yard site, we have Sholosh Tevas Hain and whatever, Sholosh, Habob Midah, when they're large enough, then they're not Makabal Tumah. Large enough for that purpose is defined as they hold 40 saw of dry measure or 60 saw of, or the other way around, 40 saw of liquids or 60 saw of dry, because the idea is when you put dry things in it, you heap it up. And so it goes above the rim. Anyway, once it's that large, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, the point is that it's not mitalto mole verekon. Such a container of such a size, you wouldn't be able to carry it whether full or empty. Because if you try to carry it when it's full, when it's holding its load of 40 or more saw, then it would break. So therefore you carry it empty and then you refill it, you fill it when you get to your destination. Therefore, that kind of, now, how do we know, b'chlal, that wooden, let's talk about wooden kalim, although this applies to a certain extent to other materials as well. Where do we know that wooden kalim are makabel tumah? We learn that from the fact that the pasuk mentions wood in the, together with a sack. So therefore, we learn from that to be makabel tumah, a kali has to be like a sack. And since a sack is metalto, mole verekon, you can carry it empty or full, therefore, a kali to be makabel tumah also has to be metalto, mole verekon. So these kalim, these wooden kalim that are larger than that amount, are not metalta molivereik, and therefore they're not makabel tumah. So now, this person is inside the box, where the box itself is not going to be makabel tumah because of its size, and therefore it'll also block the tumah from coming to him, and he goes into Eretz Ha'amim inside such a box. So now, the Braisa says, Rebbe Matame v'Rabbi Yosi b'Yehuda Matar. So Rebbe holds that he's still Tomei for reasons that we're going to discuss, and Rebbe Yosi b'Yehuda holds that he's Tahor. So my lab, so shouldn't we assume that Rebbe Sava Mishum Avira, Rebbe Yosi b'Yehuda Sava Mishum Gusha? So evidently, then, that would be the Machlokes. Rebbe holds that the problem is the Avir, the very air of Eretz Ha'amim is Tomei. So very well, he went into a box, but it doesn't matter. In other words, he's still in the airspace of Eretz Ha'amim, and the fact that he's inside a box doesn't prevent that. Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda suffered mishum gusha. Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda would hold the problem is the dirt of it. Well, then he's not standing on the dirt, and he's not an oichel over the dirt, because then the box itself forms a chatzitza between him and the dirt, so therefore he'd be tahor. So you'd see, therefore, that the answer, whether it would be, if you figure that way, then the question of whether it's mishum aver or mishum gush is actually that machlokes tanoim. So the Gemara answers, loy, not necessarily. Dekulei alma mishum gusha. We could actually say that both Rebbe and Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda hold that the problem is the dirt. But then the machlokes is, mar sova oihel zoruk shmei oihel. One of them holds that a throne tent is considered a tent. When we say throne over here, what we mean is, for example, in this case, not necessarily being thrown, but in other words, it's being transported. It's a movable tent that's being carried from one place to another. So Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that such a thing is considered a valid oihel, and therefore it will block the Torah from getting to him. Umar Sava, Lo Shmei Oihel, whereas Rebbe will hold that such a thing is not considered an oihel, and oihel is only going to be if it's staying in one place. So in that case, the machlokes might not be about Aver versus Gush at all. In other words, Rebbe would be saying that even if the problem is only Gush, you're thinking because the person is inside the box, therefore that blocks the Tumas Oihel of overshadowing dirt of Eretz Amin from reaching him. No, because it's only an Oihel Zoruch, and such a thing doesn't count as an Oihel. So now, the next couple of lines of Gemara, Tosfos has two ways of explaining it. So we'll explain according to one. So we'll learn it according to, and there's a slightly different girsa in the middle as well. So we'll learn according to the first one, and then we'll learn according to the second one. The second one, actually, most of the Rishonim also agree that that's the correct explanation. There's of course implications in halacha between the two of them, so we'll get to it. Anyway. So we're saying that Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda would hold that an oihel zoruk, that a moving oihel, is still called an oihel. But the Gemara asks, Vahatanya, but don't we learn in a braisa, Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda oimer tevashi malaya kalim, doesn't that if a person takes a box full of kalim, and the zorkal pnei mess, and he throws it over the surface of a mess, so that's a classic example of oihel zoruk, he's literally throwing the oihel, but oihel, in an oihel, now Tosfos takes out the word, but oihel, because it's not really relevant. We're not talking about that he throws it inside an oihel. We're talking about the box itself. The question is whether it's an oihel to prevent the tumah from getting to the kaven. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who justify the word ba'oihel over here, because one possibility, in fact, is that what we mean is that he's throwing it through an oihel on this, and the question is what happens to the kalim that are inside the box. So there's something the Mishnah Melech actually explains on Rambam that when we talk about oihel zoruk, that would only be if a person is in an oihel mess, so he's not directly over the mess, and yet of course normally tumas oihel would make him tome, so then maybe an oihel zoruk would help. So in that case, then that's what we're talking about over here, that you would have the word oihel over here. Anyway, so he does that. So the braisa continues tmeya. So then the contents of the box are still tame because it's an oihel zoruk. The imhoisa munachas, but if the box was sitting in one place and not moving, then tahora. Then it would be tahora because now it would be an oihel kavua. So what are you telling me then? So what are you telling me, Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda holds that an oihel zoruk is an oihel, and for that reason, when the person goes into Eretz Amin in a shita tevo migdol, then he's going to remain tahor according to Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda because he's inside an oihel. This last braisa that we just quoted over here is saying that even according to Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, an oihel zoruk is not a valid oihel. And the answer would be Ella. So rather, we'd have to answer to kula alma mishum avira. No, so rather we would have to say that everybody would agree, both Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda and Rebbe, that the problem of Eretz Amin is the Avir, is the actual air, and we're also going to have to assume that they both say that Oihel Zoruk is not an Oihel. But Umar Sava, Kivin Dele Shechichel, Gozer Be'er Abanan, but the difference is Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda would say, it's true that an Oihel Zoruk is not an Oihel, and it's true the problem is Avir, but it's uncommon to go someplace inside a box. So therefore, he's going to say, so therefore, the Chachamim did not make the Gzeira, and therefore, since the whole problem of Eretz Amim is only Derabbanan, because again, Daraisa, unless we have a Chazaka of Tumah in a place, we're not going to assume that it's Tumah. then therefore the Chachamim can be makel in this case and say that because it's an unusual circumstance, therefore we can say that he remains tahor. Umar Sava, whereas Rebbe is going to hold Afagav Zloy Shticha, even though it's not very common, Goz Rebbe Rabbanim, nevertheless the Chachamim still make their Gzeira and make him Tomei. Vaha Tanya, and indeed we learn in a Braisa, so this is the first Vaha Tanya was a question, the second one would be a proof, as the Gemara sometimes does that. So Vaha Tanya, and indeed we learn in a Braisa, Hanichas Eretz Amim B'Shita Tevo Migdol, if a person goes into Eretz Amim in one of these large wooden boxes, Tahar, then he remains Tahar, but Bakorin was spinner over Iscariot, but if he goes in there, Bakorin in a wagon, or coach, really, which is also enclosed. It's also bob midah. It's large enough to contain a person comfortably. So pretty much by definition, it has to be bob midah. But it's a normal way of traveling. Over sphina, or he's in a boat, which on the face of it should be an oil between him and the riverbed or the seabed or whatever. Over iscaria, or he goes there in an iscaria. An iscariot, Tosfos explains, is the mast of a ship. Actually, Tosfos says, really, it means more the oars of a ship. But whatever, whether it's the oars or the mast, we don't mean he's actually sitting on top of the oar or on top of the mast. What we really mean is that he's in a large enough boat that has a mast. Meaning, in other words, the Mefarish says that more clearly. In other words, that a sphina, the sphina would be a smaller boat, so it's large enough. It's still bob amida, but it would be like something like a canoe or a kayak or something like that, whereas an iscariot would be a larger boat that's large enough to have a mast with a sail on it. Or, according to the way Tosfos is translating it, it would mean that's large enough to need a lot of oars to row it, as opposed to, let's say, a small kayak or whatever, which you only need really one oar for it. Anyway, the point is, Tomei, in that case, the Braisa says that he is Tomei. And the idea would be, in other words, that Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is not disagreeing. So therefore, we can say that, it is exactly that point of whether it's shchicha, whether it's something common. It's very common to travel in a coach or in a boat. Therefore, even Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is going to agree that he becomes Tomei. And we can say, therefore, that this braisa goes according to him. It's uncommon to be transported inside a box. Therefore, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says, yes, I know oil zorok is not an oil. And I know the problem is avil. But in this case, I would say it's so uncommon that the chachamim are not going to make a gzeir on it. So you could say that that's the machloikas. And in that case, again, it has nothing to do with avil versus gush. All of that was Tosfos' first set. Yeah.
By that logic, it wouldn't matter in any case if a Kohen was already in Eretz Amim and he was Tamim Mase to have him put him in a box to go to a cemetery. It wouldn't make any change and any difference. So
no,
why do we do that?
The fact is, going to a cemetery is most likely going to be metame him on a Daraisa level, because like we learned before, you know, you have Kvarim over there that are metame everything around them. The fact is, even when a Kohen, we learned earlier in the Masechta, for example, but even when a Nazir is already Tomei, he's still not allowed to become more Tomei, and in some cases he even gets Malchus for it. So there's something similar as far as a Kohen. Even a Kohen is Tomei, let's say, and there, you can have a much more simpler case. You can have the case where a Kohen is allowed to become Tomei Mess, for example, his relatives have died. We've learned before. Nevertheless, he's not allowed to figure, well, I'm already Tomei anyway, let me touch other dead bodies as well. For that reason, we talked about earlier in the Masechta, for example, that's very common, or I don't know how common it is anymore, but it used to be more common that Kohenim were buried at the edge of the cemetery, so that way their relatives, when they're burying them, are not coming too close to the other Kohenim. So that's even when he's Tomei Mess, Doraisa. Here we're talking about Eretz Amim, he's only Derabbanan. For sure, that doesn't give him license to come close to other Kvarim, which there he'd be becoming Tomei D'Araisa. What it does give him license to is to go elsewhere in Eretz Amim. We're not going to say that he has to return to Eretz Yisrael as soon as possible, especially because, again, nowadays in Eretz Yisrael, it's not like he's going to be able to become Tahar from Tumas Mes anyhow. We don't have Parad Ramashes. With that said, by the way, it is true when the Poskim Achronim discussed the whole question that we started talking about yesterday of Kohenim on airplanes, some of them do bring this point as sort of a sniff, as maybe another reason to be matir. The fact that we have a lot of sphakas involved over here anyhow, about how exactly have they become tame, and is there necessarily a problem with them flying over cemeteries, which is this whole business of Oyel Zoruk over here. So one question is, depending on whether we end up saying that Oyel Zoruk, Shmei Oyel or not, that's going to be one of the things that factors into that. It is true that even being an Eretz Anim doesn't give him license to go into cemeteries.
Even his level of tumor doesn't go up. It's as high as possible already being
understood.
An Eretz Anim.
Nevertheless, he still has a mitzvah in the Torah not to become tamei nes, and therefore he still has to avoid it as much as possible. Again, just like even when he became tamei for his relatives, where there's no question he's at the maximum degree of tumor, and nevertheless we're still saying he can't become tamei for other mason. Yeah. So now, all of that was Tosfos' first explanation. Tosfos' second explanation of the flow of the last few lines of the Gemara was as follows. Again, we started with the question of whether Rebbe and Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing whether Eretz Amim is based on Gush or based on Adir. So first we said that no, they might both agree that it's Gush, but it's a question of Oyhol Zaruk. So now, according to Tosfos, the second explanation, that both the Hotanyas are benichusa, both of them are not a question, but rather a statement, to prove what we said. And so the first Hotanya would be that you learn in a braisa that Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says that if you have a box full of kalim and you throw it over the mess, then it's tamei. In that explanation, then we would say that the contents of the box are tamei because, in other words, Tosfos explains there's a difference between whether the box is thrown where the box is thrown and flying through the air versus here we're talking about that the original case we were talking about a person goes into Eretz Amin in a shita tevo migo, so we're talking about somebody who's carrying it is touching the ground. So Tosfos refers to, for example, the Mishnah in Ahalos that says that, for example, if you have a talus flying through the air. So imagine, for example, you had somebody put out their wash on their line to dry, and one of the pieces flew off the line and is now flying through the air. Imagine that now. Punct happens that it's flying over you and there happens to be a kazayis min ames next to you. Would you become tamei? The Mishnah says that not. Such a thing is not considered an oihel for any purpose in halacha. It's just flying free in the wind. So by the same token, then when you're taking a box full of kalim and throwing it, it's also flying free, and therefore Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda would agree that that's not considered an oihel. What we're talking about over here, when a person goes into Eretz Amim, the Shita Tevo Migdo is talking about where there are people or animals carrying the box, and they are in contact with the ground, so then Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda would hold that that's considered an oihel. So we could answer it that way. Then the Gemara goes on to say, So now in this second explanation of Tosfos, the next word in the Gemara after that is not Ela, like we have it in front of us, but rather V'ibois Ema. But rather, if you want, I can give a different answer. So in other words, according to this second explanation of Tosfos, and again, most of the Rishonim agree with it, is that the Gemara has given one answer. So either way, we're saying they're not arguing about Aver or Gush. We're saying both of them agree that the problem is Gush, but the question is that Oihol Zoruk is, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda says that there's certain kinds of Oihol Zoruk that are considered an Oihol, namely where they're being carried on the ground, versus a different kind, such as flying through the air, where he's going to agree that that's not considered an Oihol Zoruk, like a box flying through the air, or like a talus flying through the air. Then the Gemara goes on with another potential, with another possible answer, which is that they both agree. The problem is either, and the question is whether it's, and we would say that because it's less common to go in a Shita Teva or Migdol, therefore, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda would hold there's no Gzera, and Vahal Tanya, and indeed we learn a Braisa that bears that out. So in other words, so therefore, even he would agree that if a person is inside a coach or whatever, then he's tame because it would be the problem would indeed be because of Aver. So those are the two different ways that Tosfos has of explaining the flow of the Gemara of the last few lines. Then the Gemara continues. The Iboisema, or I can give another answer. So according to Tosfos' first explanation, this is the second answer that we're sticking with, because again, the first answer we schlugged up. According to Tosfos' second explanation, this is now the third answer that we're sticking with, because we had so far two answers that are equally good. So now we have another one. Hacha Shema Yotzi Rosh Veruba L'Sham Pligi. The machloikus would be, is the person are we concerned that the person might stick out his head and most of his body over the Eretz Am? So in other words, so if a person is going inside a box, that's not very likely. On the other hand, if he goes in a coach or a ship or whatever, then he's much more likely to, because of course you can stick your head and your body out of the windows over there. Whereas Rebbe is still concerned that even inside a box he might do that. So, in fact, the Shita Mekubetzus brings that, in fact, for that reason, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda is gonna, and maybe even Rebbe would say that in the case of Kalim, it's tougher, because, fine, Kalim aren't gonna stick their heads and their bodies out. So that would be the machlokas. Pligi is the machlokas. Vaha Tanya, and indeed we learn in a braisa of Yosef Rabbi Yehuda Omer Hanichas Eretz Amim the Shita Teva Migdol Tahor. Person goes into Eretz Amim in one of these kinds of boxes. He's Tahor. Ad Shiyotzi L'Sham Roisha Erubai, unless he puts his head or really it's supposed to be and most of his body over there. So when he goes in a coach or a ship or whatever, then it's normal enough for him to stick his head and most of his body out. So therefore, the Chachamim are going to be goyzer and say that he's tamei, just in case he did. But in the case of a box where it's unlikely for him to do that, then Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says there's no reason to be goyzer. And Rebbe is saying even in that case we're still going to be goyzer. So now comes the relevance of all of this as far as Kohenim flying in airplanes, where you have a number of considerations. The airplane itself is certainly Baba Mida. It's far larger than 40 Sa'. It's sealed, by definition. On the other hand, you certainly can't stick out your head and most of your body. On the other hand, is flying through the air, and especially according to Tosfos' second explanation, even Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is going to hold that something that's flying through the air and not in any way in contact with the ground is not chotzitz b'fnei tumah. So because of all those considerations, as well as others as well, there are other considerations that factor into this as well. Rav Moshe writes in one of his Chuvos that maybe we could say that now metal kalim are not subject to this rule of Baba Midah. They're transmitting tumor regardless. But Rav Moshe writes in one of his Chuvos, potentially, maybe we would say, the Torah mentions only six metals that are Mekabel Tumah: gold, silver, copper, iron, tin, and lead. Maybe you could say planes nowadays are generally not made out of any of those materials. Mostly they're made out of aluminum. So maybe Rav Moshe writes in one of his Chuvos, maybe aluminum is not in that category, and therefore it wouldn't be Mekabel Tumah. But then in a later Chuvah, he says maybe not necessarily. And the fact is that even more contemporary posts can point out that there are plenty of components of airplanes nowadays that are made out of steel and therefore would be Mekabel Tumah even according to that. So the Maskana, many poskim do agree that there is a problem, that there is a problem with Kohenim flying in planes over cemeteries, and therefore over the years, they've tried out different things. For a while, there was this thing, people had these big bags that they would put themselves inside figuring that that will help because of the gene of Talmud Pasul. Not everybody agrees that that's valid either. Over time, different times, for example, different airlines, El Al in particular, has actually in response to requests about these kinds of things, they've actually sometimes changed their flight paths to not go over known Jewish cemeteries in Eretz Yisrael. Again, in Chutzlar, if there's much less of an issue, for one thing, because you anyway have the question of whether Goyish Kvarim or even Matame Ba'oyel, if you go like Reb Shimon, they're not. And the majority of cemeteries in Chutz Laaretz, of course, are goyim, and therefore there's much less of an issue. But but when it comes to Kohenim flying over Jewish graves, in fact, and again, you do have the fact also that most of the vast majority of the Rishonim, Paskin like Rebbe, who's more machmir in our sugya, and as we're saying, our sugya over here holds oyhel zaruk, that a moving oyhel is loishmei oyhel, is not considered an oyhel, and therefore that creates potential issues. Okay, but in any case, the point of the sugya is that we don't have to say necessarily that Rebbe and Rebbe Yosef and Rebbe Yehuda are arguing about the issue of Gusha or Avira. You could give different possible answers, that some of which depend on them saying that they both agree that the problem is Gush, and others of them, and other answers being that they both agree the problem is Avir. Lamaskona, we do hold the halacha that the problem is Avir. The problem is not only Gush, the problem is actually Avir. So it's not even a matter necessarily of having to be sprinkled with part adam or water, but it is a matter of the person becomes tamei as a result of going to Eretz Anim again, because the Chachamim wanted to discourage people from leaving Eretz Yisrael.
What about being in a ship and passing over dead human bodies?
Well, that's what we said in our Gemara just now. We mentioned Besfina, a person is in a ship. Or be scallion. We said a large ship that has a mast. Yeah. So in fact, we said that he is Tomei. And we said a couple of possibilities. One is because since that's a common thing, Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda agrees that we're going to make Zera on it. And the other possibility is because you might stick out your head and most of your body over the surface. And then you're going to become Tomei, because obviously then the ship is not going to be a Chatzitza.
So, my question is, then a Kohen shouldn't go on a ship.
A ship is not necessarily going over places where there are known bodies. Again, the whole question is, as far as Kohenim and planes or whatever, is where there are known to be bodies. It's a little bit different where it's only Eretz Amin, where there's the possibility that there might be bodies buried over there. Then we have less reason to be concerned.
There are known bodies. I mean, it's a fact that the sea and even lakes have dead bodies.
So if you have a particular lake or a particular sea that you know that there are bodies deposited in there, then you might have an issue. But you take, for example, you're going in the Hudson River, or you're going in New York Bay or whatever. Not necessarily other bodies over there. And even if there were bodies at one point, they're probably long gone.
Well, for instance, in Uman, where they have pilgrimages every year, it is very well known that the lake is the site of a mass murder, and there are many, many dead bodies there.
Kohenim are traveling in boats on that lake? They go to Uman. They're not necessarily traveling over that lake. I don't know. I've never been to the place. I have no idea what Kohenim do over there, but I don't know. I don't know any reason to think that they're Davka traveling over that lake. And even if they are, again, that massacre was 250 years ago. The bodies are long since gone, probably. I don't know.
No, but they go to the lake to do for Tashlich.
That's not the same thing at all. That's like you're standing next to the lake. You're not traveling over the lake. That's different. All right, let's go on.
So if your face is over the lake,
who says their face has to be over the lake? If their face was over the lake, it might be a problem. But first of all, their face is not necessarily over it. They're standing next to it. And even if it is, come on, the bodies aren't by the edge of the water over there. They'd be deeper down in the water. All right, let's go on, and if you want, we can chat about this later. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, Umaschil Umoyne. We said that now, so we discussed, we have the the example in On Mishnah of a person who became a Metzora during the time that he was a Nazir, and we said that the among the various stages of his Tzaras, some of them will count towards his days of Nazirus, and some will not. What we said was that we said you have the days of the days of his quarantine, the days of Esgera, when he's locked up waiting for the Kohen's verdict. Those, we said, do count towards his Nazirus, according to Tosfos, only if in the end he ends up being Tahor. On the other hand, we said the days when he's actually excluded from the city, which are called Yemei Gomrei, and afterwards, the 7 days that he counts after the beginning of his Tara, before the next stage of his Tara, those days don't count towards his Nazirus, but they don't make him forfeit what he counted so far. So we said, Umas Tulamoni, he starts counting. So now, Omer of Chista, instead of Chista explains, Lo Shonu, our Mishnah is only talking about that those days don't count towards Nazirus, Ela B'Nazirus Mu'etis, only when it's a short Nazirus. So say, for example, a typical Nazirus of 30 days. So now, the problem is, in other words, what's going to happen? Now, as a Metzora, as we discussed, he's going to have to shave. He actually shaves twice a week apart, normally. So fine, we talked about yesterday the idea because even though a Nazir is not allowed to shave, but here where he became a Metzora, then that overrides that. We're going to talk about that in more detail later on in the parak. There's the fact of Esed Doichaloi Seseh, there's the fact that, like the Rambam says, that his Nazirus is kind of in a state of suspension right now while he's Metzora. Whatever the case, then the fact is that he does shave. Now, the problem is, though, once he does all that shaving of the Metzora, then, of course, he doesn't have 30 days growth of hair, and we've learned many times in the Masechta already, you need 30 days growth of hair to finish your Nazirus. So therefore, Rav Chista says, when you have a Nazirus Mu'etis, when you have a short Nazirus of 30 days or thereabouts, then, or a little bit more than that, then yes, the time of his Chaluta and the time of his Sfira, you're not going to count towards his Nazirus because, practically speaking, at the end, he's not going to have 30 days left of his Nazirus to be able to cut his hair. Abba b'Nazirus Merubah, but Rav Chista says if it was a long Nazirus, so say he had taken on a couple of months or a year or whatever, then Rav Chista says Mislak Nami Sokin Lay, then the days of his Tzaras will in fact count towards it because there's no problem. At the end, he'll still have at least 30 days left to be able to regrow his hair. However, the Gemara says Masiv Rav Shrevya. Rav Shrevya says I have a contradiction to that. From our Mishnah, we said Maschil Amoina Miyad. We said he starts recounting right away because we said unlike a Nazir who became Tomer with one of the Tomers that we had earlier in the Perek, he doesn't have to start his Nazirus over again. We said that he does begin right after he becomes Tomer. He recontinues his Nazirus. The Ein Mevatel Behenas HaKodmin, and he doesn't forfeit the previous days. So now, Rav Shrevya says, B'mai. So now you have to figure out what is the scenario the Mishnah is talking about. Ilema b'Nazirus Mu'etis. Are you talking about it's only a short Nazirus of 30 days? What do you mean? How could the Tana say that he doesn't lose any days? Haboy Gidol Seir. The fact is he does require enough time to regrow his hair. So what are you telling me? He's not losing anything. Bal Koche, whether you like it or not, he's going to have to lose days because, again, he's going to have to lose a number of days equivalent to whatever it takes to get back up to 30 days. So say, for example, he was a Nazir for just 30 days. He got Saras 10 days in. What are you going to say? The whole thing. So you're going to say, let's say he's outside the Machna for a week. And let's say, for example, then he's healed of the Tzaras and then they start the process of his Tara and he has another week. So you're going to say now he's up to 24 days. Very nice. The fact is, you're fine. He only has 6 days left of his Nazirus. But the fact is, he's going to need 30 days to regrow his hair. So of necessity, he's going to need another 24 days anyhow. To be able to regrow, so that the fact is he is losing lots of time. So obviously the Mishnah can't be talking about that case. El alav v'nazirus merubah. Evidently, then we have to assume that the Mishnah is talking about a longer nazirus. V'katani maschil amoina miyad. And yet the Mishnah says that he starts counting right away. In other words, that only after you may suffer, right? Only after those 7 days of counting. So in other words, so we're saying that even by Nezirus Merubah, the days of his Nezirus don't count towards it. So that would be the Chiddush of the Mishnah. So not like Reb Chista, who says that if, let's say, the guy was a Nazir for 100 days, and in this scenario over here that we just described, he ends up being healed of his Saras 24 days in. We're there, you're going to say, he still has 76 days left to go, which is more than enough. And therefore, he wouldn't lose anything. The Mishnah is not implying that. The Mishnah is implying, when it says, Maskel Amona Miyad, that he has to start counting right away, implying counting from where he left off. So, in other words, he's not forfeiting the original 10 days, but he is forfeiting the entire 2 weeks that he would, let's say in our scenario, the entire 2 weeks that he went through, the Tzaras process, because those don't count at all. So the Gemara answers, who moistiv la v'hu mefarik la? Rav Shrevya, who asked the question, he also answered that you don't have to say the Mishnah is contradicting the Chista, because the Nezirus bas chamishim yod. You could be talking about that the Nezirus was originally taken on for 50 days. We don't daft mean 50, we mean something around that, where in other words, there can be enough time for growth of hair. Or where there might just be barely enough time for growth of hair. So in other words, the case would be the Yosef Esrin. So suppose, for example, he went through 20 days of his Nezirus so far, then he developed Tzaras. So now, so again, there's going to come the point when he shaves after the Tzaras process. At that point, once he's finished with Tzaras, he's still going to have to sit for another 30 days. So now we would say that that's the scenario. He's not losing any days. All it is the time in between that he had Saras is not counting towards his 50 days, but it's not making him lose any time either. Gidol Seir, because after all, you have 30 days left for him to have Gidol Seir. So therefore, you could say the Mishnah is telling us both. On the one hand, it's telling us that he's not forfeiting, on the one hand, the Mishnah is telling us that he can start recounting as soon as he finishes with the Tzaras, and that's good enough because there are 30 days left and he's not losing anything because he has 30 days. On the other hand, the days of the Tzaras don't count. So the Mishnah doesn't contradict Rav Chista. You could say that if, let's say, for example, he made a Nezirus of several months, let's say, and then you would say actually that as long as you have more than 30 days, then in fact all the time that he so Tosfos gives an example. Let's say he took on Nezirus for 53 days. So he went through 20 days, then he had 14 days of then he had 14 days of Tzaras. So now what'll happen is that. So some of the days of the Tzaras will count towards his Nezirus. Because, again, you need 30 days of growth of hair at the end. If all of the days counted, then so far he'd be up to day 34 of his Nezirus. He has 19 days to go, but 19 days is enough. So fine, 11 days of the Tzaras won't count, but 3 of them will, because the whole Tzaras process took him, in this example, 2 weeks. And if the Nezirus was longer than that, if let's say he had taken on Nezirus for 70 days, then he wouldn't lose, or 65 days, he wouldn't lose anything at all, because by the time he gets to day 34 of his Nezirus, and he's bringing his Korbanus for Tzaras, fine, he still has over a month left of his Nezirus, and therefore he doesn't have to lose anything at all. And therefore the whole time that he was in Metzora, we can be saying, like Rav Chista is saying, it still counts towards his Nezirus. He only has to wait now another 30 or 31 or whatever it is. Okay. So that answers that question. But now the Gemara is going to bring another question on Rav Chista, and this question, the discussion of this question is going to take us into the middle of the next omelet. We're going to introduce a case that we're going to talk about. The Mishnah is going to discuss this case later in the Masechta. Now, you have like this. We've talked before about, so again, we had a Nazir becomes a Metzora. We said that the issue of him shaving is suspended, and when it comes time for him to shave for his Tzaras, then he's going to do that. never mind the fact that he's a nazir, because the fact that he has to shave for his taras overrides that. Now we also know, as we know from earlier in the Masechta, that if a nazir becomes tamei, same thing, we make an exception and we tell him to shave at the end after he becomes tahor from his tumas nes, and then he shaves and then brings his korbanos and restarts his nazirus. Now later on in the perek, we're going to talk about what happens if a person has a suffix on these things. It's a massive Rami Bachoma. So Rami Bachoma says, I have a contradiction on Rav Chisda. The Mishnah says later on in our perek, Nazir Shahaya Tomei B'Safek U'Mukhlat B'Safek. Suppose that a Nazir was Tomei with a Safek, and he was also Mukhlat, he was also confirmed as a Mitzora with a Safek. So there's a Safek whether he became Tomei Nes. There's also a Safek whether he's considered a Mitzora. Now, how do you have a doubt about Tumas Nes is easy enough to find. We're going to have at the beginning of the next parak examples of that. How do you have examples of him being a Mitzora Misafik? Usually, in fact, you have the rule. Usually, you have in fact the rule that says that Safik Negoyim Tahor. So there are a number of explanations that we showed him in Achronim offer. One of them is based on a Yerushalmi. First of all, the Yerushalmi over here explains that you can be talking about that a Kohen has seen two different Mitzrayim, and one of them he declared Mukhlat and the other one not, and now he forgot which one is which. So now we would say that both of them are Tomei Misafik. On the other hand, the Chazon Ish has a problem with that, doesn't seem to work. Tosfos gives an example that you're talking about that it's a suffix whether what's covering part of his body is actual tzaras or only a boihak or only something which would be like freckles or eczema or whatever. So Tosfos gives that as an example of a suffix of tzaras. And then different achronim ask on that, Karen Ur, the Chazon Ish ask on that, it doesn't seem to work. Then you have other possibilities. You can have, for example, you have the case the Rambam describes in Hilchos Tzaras. You have the famous case where you're not sure which came first, the spot of Tzaras or the white hair. You have the famously the Gemara in Bava Metzia tells us that they were arguing about that in the Sivta Dirakia in the Yeshiva Shomaila, and they called in Rabba, and Rabba passed away. And as he was giving the answer to that, he passed away. Anyway, the question is, we know the Torah tells us that if a person has a spot of Tzaras on his skin, and then because of that the hair turns white, then he's Tomei Mukhlat. On the other hand, if the hair was white from beforehand and then Tzaras develops around it, it's not going to be Tomei. What happens if there's a Safek? So then the Rambam paskins that is Safek Tomei. So there you'd have an example of Safek. There you'd have an example of Safek Negoyim. Another example, Minchas Chinuch gives another example. What happens if the Kohen who declared him Tomei was a Tumtum or an Androgynous or whatever? So it's a Suffolk, whether he's a man or a woman, or if he's a man, he's able to give a verdict on the Kohen. If he's a woman, then not. Anyway, whatever the case, you have a case of Suffolk Mitzor, and you also have a case of Suffolk Tomeiness. Now, of course, the problem is that because of the Suffolk, you can't necessarily tell him to shave because of his tumor or because of his tzaras. What if he's not Tomei? What if he's not a Mitzora? So the Mishnah describes, so Sarshaya Tomei B'Suffolk or Mukhlat B'Suffolk. So he had a Suffolk of tumor as well, of tumas mess, as well as a Suffolk of tzaras. So the Mishnah says, so what he has to do is like this. He waits. So now let's say, for example, his Nazirus was 30 days. At the end of 30 days, no matter what, he's going to be able to shave, because even if he wasn't Tomei and not a Mitzvah, at the end of 30 days, his Mitzvah is over, and he can shave and bring his Korbanos. So at the end of 30 days, the Mishnah says, so what happens is, at the end of 30 days, then he shaves, and that shaving might be one of a few possibilities. It might be that he's shaving because his Mitzvah is over. It might be that he's shaving because this is the first shaving of the Mitzora, or it might be he's shaving because he's another Tomei and is starting his Nazirus over. So one way or the other, at the end of 30 days, you can shave to cover that. what he does as far as Korbanos, Tosfos discusses in some detail over here what he has to do as far as his Korbanos. That's not quite so simple, of course, because some of his Korbanos he can bring because of a suffix, but some of them he cannot. But fine, he can still, we learned earlier in the Masechta, that you can vidyeved, even though the Nazir is supposed to bring three Korbanos, vidyeved, you can shave in connection with only one of them. So therefore he can do that. He can bring one of the Korbanos and be able to shave. Then what happens is he has to wait another 3 days. Then he does another shaving. Now again, there are possibilities. It might be that this is the second shaving of the Metzora. It might be that before he was a Nazir Tameh and now he's shaving as a Nazir Tahor. Or it might be that this shaving is completely unnecessary. And then he brings more Korbanos, because again, if he's a Metzora, he has to bring Korbanos for his Tzaras. So therefore, the Mishnah ends up saying that Oichel B'Kodshim L'Achav Shishim Yom, once 60 days have passed, then he's able to eat Kodshim. Because once he did his first two shavings, then no matter what, even if he was a Metzora, then he's already covered his two shavings and he's brought his Korbanos, and therefore now he's completely Tahor from the Tumah of a Metzora, if he ever was a Metzora in the first place. So one way or the other, by the time 60 days have passed, by the time Tosfos explains, it comes the 61st day, then for sure he's not a Mechoser Kapara anymore, therefore he's able to eat Kodshim. He hasn't necessarily brought his Korbanos of a Nazir Tameh. Tosfos points out, as we've learned earlier in the Masechta, a Nazir Tameh is not really considered a Mechoser Kapara in that sense, because the Korbanos he has to bring are not so much in order to get him out of his state of Tumah, but for him to be able to restore his Nazirus. Anyway, continues the Mishnah, the Shoyse Yayin with Tamil Mesim Lacham Meyav Esrim Yayin. As far as drinking wine and becoming Tamil Mes, as far as his Nazirus actually being over, for that he has to wait 120 days. Because what happens is, so the Mishnah goes on with what he has to do. So again, at the end of 30 days, he needed one shaving, which might be any of three possibilities. At the end of another 30 days, he needed another shaving, which again might be any of several different possibilities. Might be the second shaving of the Metzora, might be the shaving of his Nazirus Tara. Or it might be nothing at all. Then he has to wait another 30 days, and then he, then he has to wait another 30 days, and, so now he's up to 90 days. So now he shaves yet again, and it might be, because now he's a Nazir Tahor, it might be during the first 30 days, it might be that he was a Metzora, and therefore, again, during the first 60 days, those didn't count towards Nazirus at all. So now, at the end of 90 days, he needs to shave, because now he may have only been a Metzora and not Tamei Mes, and now he just finished his Nazirus Tara. So he shaves again, and brings Korbanos, and again, Tosfos discusses in some detail exactly what Korbanos he brings. Then he waits yet another 30 days. Now you have the fourth possibility. What if he was both a Metzora and a Tamei Mes? So what if the shaving and Korbanos that he brought on the 90th day were actually for Nazirus? What if he was a Metzora? So he couldn't even start his Nazirus. He couldn't even start his first Nazirus until after the 60 days are over. So now he does his Nazirus Tumah, and then he does his Nazirus Tara. By the way, later on, it points out, the Mishnah and the Gemara point out later, that you can't have one shaving do double duty. You can't say, well, look, I was a Metzora and a Tumah Mes, so now I'll shave and it'll cover my Tzaras and it'll cover my Tumah Mes. Doesn't work. You need a separate shaving for each one. So therefore, again, he needs to shave at the end of 90 days and again at the end of 120 days. Once you reach 120 days, all the possibilities have been covered. Even if he was a Metzora and his two shavings were on day 30 and 60, and he was a Nazir Tameh and his shaving for that was on day 90, then good, day 120 is, or 121, whatever, is the day of his shaving for his Nazirus Taka. So therefore, once you reach 120 days, then he's allowed to drink wine and become Tamei Mes, because no matter what, he's for sure finished his Nazirus by that point. Thus far the Mishnah. The Tani Allah, Rami Bahama continues, we have a Braisa in reference to that Mishnah, but Medvarama Murbin Nazirus Mu'ekis. When would all that apply that you have that after 60 days you can eat Kodshim, and after 120 days he's completely free of Nazirus, would only be if it was Nazirus Mu'ekis, only if it was the minimum Nazirus of 30 days. Avob Nazirus Bashana, but suppose he took on the original Nazirus a year, Oichel b'kodshim l'achas shteishanim, then he's going to have to wait to eat kodshim for 2 years after the suffix began, because, again, you're going to have, he can't shave throughout the whole first year, because he might be a nazir tahor, so he has to wait until the end of the first year to even shave on the possibility that he was a mitzvah. Then he has to wait another year to shave for the same reason, because he may not have been a nazir, he may not have been a mitzvah, he may have only been a nazir tamei, and so on and so forth. And when is he going to be able to drink wine and become tamei mes? Only after 4 years, because each of the haircuts is going to end, and the korbanos are going to have to be a year apart for the same reason. The Rambam describes in Hilchos Nazirus, you can even have a case. What if the Nazirus originally they took on was for 10 years? Same idea. Then he'll only be able to eat Kodshim. After 20 years, he'll only be able to be Shosiyayin Matam Mason after 40 years. Same idea. Now, so Rami Bahama asks the question. So now, again, Rav Chista had said that when we're talking Nazirus Meruba, when after the Tzaraf, there's left at least 30 days, enough for him to be able to regrow his hair, then Rav Chisda said the entire period when he was a Mitzurda counts towards his Nazirus, because at the end of it, there'll still be 30 days for him to grow his hair. Now, Rami Bachama says, the Isakudai Sarkin Layomi. Now, if you're going to tell me that the days of his Saras count towards his Nazirus, then why does he need, in the last case of the Braisa, where you're telling me his Nazirus was a year, and therefore you're telling me he needs four years, why does he need four years? Tiskele v'shalosh shanim v'shalosh yom. All he should need is 3 years and 30 days, and at the end of that, he's mutter to drink wine, etc. Because he would have 2 years, because of the suffix tzaraas, so fine, he can't shave in the middle of the first year, or in the middle of the second year, because he might still be a Nazir. But now, after 2 years have passed, now he should only need to keep 30 days. If he's a Nazir Tahar, then it doesn't matter. The days of its Saras still counted towards the Nazirus. So the second year will have counted towards the Nazirus. So now he only needs to wait 30 days to regrow his hair. And fine, if you're going to say, if he was a Nazir Tomei, so he hasn't yet done Nazirus Tumi, he hasn't yet done Nazirus Tara, so fine, you have a suffix of that as well, so therefore he needs a year of that. But in any case, all he needs then total is 3 years and 30 days, because at some point, all you need is 30 days to regrow his hair. So you're going to have 1 year and then he does his first shaving, a second year, then he does his second shaving, a third year only begins, and he just waits 30 days, enough to regrow his hair, and shaves, and then he needs another year in case it was another chunk. So the fact that the Mishnah doesn't say that, the fact that the Mishnah says he needs four years, shows not like Rav Chisda. No matter what, the time when he was a Mitzvah is not going to count towards the Nazirus, whether it was Nazirus Mu'etis or whether it was Nazirus Merubah. So that's Rami Bachama's question. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Rav Ashi is going to bring another question on Rav Chisda, which is a much more elaborate one. We're going to quote a long braisa that then Rav Ashi is going to prove from it, not like Rav Chisda. And that will take up most of the next daf, and we'll do that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.